This is Sound Ideas. I'm Mike McCurdy. Here from Bloomington and Normal's city managers who are trying to rebuild a relationship both think has suffered.
We recognize that the relationship between the two cities is certainly not as good as we'd like it to be. It was a bit frosty.
It's an interview with interim Bloomington city manager Steve Rasmussen and Town of Normal city manager Mark Peterson on relationship building and cooperation, including economic development and a possible 911 merger. And you'll hear from Illinois Appellate Court Judge James Kinect. He's the featured speaker at the 42nd Annual Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Awards Luncheon later this month. GLT's Ryan Denham has the interview. All of that and a GLT news update on the way. It's January 8th, 2018. This is Sound Ideas on GLT.
Support for the Sound Ideas podcast comes from listener contributions to GLT, with additional support from Country Financial Representative Justin M. Boyd. Information at justinmboyd.com. This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org.
It's Sound Ideas. I'm Mike McCurdy. The Town of Normal and City of Bloomington are beginning to renew cooperation. This is in part because of leadership changes. Longtime Bloomington City Manager David Hales is gone, taking a similar job in Joliet. Interim City Manager Steve Rasmussen took over in November. In Normal, town council members are reviewing candidates to replace retiring City Manager Mark Peterson. Both say things are better between the communities. In fact, both Rasmussen and Peterson discussed some items in private prior to this interview. We provided the time and a quiet room. Peterson says impromptu and planned conversations have grown more frequent.
We certainly, I think during his first couple of weeks as the interim, we probably had several conversations, both scheduled and unscheduled. And like you say, we took 10 minutes here and we talked about three items. And I think we concluded those to our mutual satisfaction. So I do think there is a greater level of communication, and that's not to be critical of David at all. I think it more speaks to Steve and his style, and it probably meshes a little bit more closely with my style.
I'd add two things to that. First of all, I appreciate the courtesy that Mark has extended to me and to continue to talk about all of these things, and I really would like to bring things together. Number one, I'd like to try to do everything we can to cooperate with the two cities, to bring the two cities together. And also, I want to work hard to try to bring within our city the council and the staff together and improve some of the divisiveness that there have been. And to that end, I wanted to propose that we change the name of Division Street to Together Street.
And are you serious about that, or are you making a
joke?
Well,
I just, for purposes of conversation here.
We've heard Mark Peterson on Sound Ideas in the past, but expressed some frustration in the past in working with the city of Bloomington. Steve, what's been your impression as the number two in Bloomington and now as the interim city manager of what it's like to work with the town?
Yeah, I have found the town to be extraordinarily cooperative. I couldn't ask for any better reception in terms of talking about issues or about things or just going into the town hall.
Any specific examples of how things have changed in the last few months from either one of you? Steve, I'll start with you.
Well, it's hard for me to say what's changed because since the relationship was between Mark and David, I wouldn't know how that's changed. But for me, of course, I've gotten a lot more involved in a number of things. And just as two examples is we have the Muhammad Aquifer Alliance that we're working together on long-term sustainability of water supplies. And another thing I have now for a long time been sitting and replaced David a little bit, stood in for him, and now in my own right on the Connect Transit Board, which you're well aware of.
And Mark?
Well, it's an interesting question, Mike, and I would say I just think there's a little more openness and willingness to share honest information than what I had encountered in the past. I think, Steve and I, frankly, we met for lunch, actually before he officially became the interim city manager. That was, I think, shortly after the council had made the decision that he was going to be, but he hadn't officially been installed. But we said, let's get together and begin to talk. And one of the things he and I both, we recognize that the relationship between the two cities is certainly not as good as we'd like it to be. And it was I use the term frosty. It was a bit frosty. And both of us, I think, vowed to do what we can together to try to remedy that and to defrost that relationship. And part of that is looking for opportunities to work together where we both can benefit. So we've talked a lot about that. We're not necessarily prepared to offer a lot of specifics, but I can tell you that he and I have talked about ways that we can work together to our mutual benefit. And we've included oftentimes Bill Wasson in those conversations, who's the third wheel here. He's the other governmental partner.
The county administrator for McLean County.
The county administrator. And certainly we do a lot of work, both of us, with the county as well. So I sense a real genuine commitment on Steve's part to do just that. Let's work together to our mutual benefit. Sometimes one of us gives more than the other. That's okay. We know in the long run we all benefit. And we've talked about some very specific things without going into detail. Some of them deal in the area of public safety, which is an area that I think our residents want us working together very, very closely on public safety. And I will say, at the department level, the fire chiefs get along very well. The two police chiefs get along very well. I think operationally there is a lot of cooperation. But as Steve and I talked, we think there's some even greater opportunities to work together in the area of public safety, and I think that would be a home run for both of us.
And I'll explore that, especially as it concerns fire protection in the northeast part of Bloomington. I'll get to some questions about that in a moment.
Can I add on to that?
And you may, Steve.
I'll give you an example of one of the things we're doing here, and that is we have for many years had our parking decks in downtown Bloomington manned by people who then take the money and give the tickets out and lift the gate. And that has some difficulty for a number of reasons, but amongst other things, it means you don't have those people out on the streets enforcing parking. And then you can't adjust that. Like, you can't say, well, we're going to charge at night or not charge at night, because then you got union issues and overtime. And so our council had recently voted to go ahead and automate that system. And so I'm not embarrassed to say, let's do it like normal does it. So what we're going to do is we're going to see if we can get the same company to do it and using the same system.
That's Heartland Parking?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I will advise you, the system that we have is not great. We're working on that system, and we're hoping to improve it. But we would love to share our experiences with you regarding automation and what has worked and what hasn't worked, so you can learn from our mistakes. I think we finally are on a pathway to getting some of those corrected, but it has not been without complications. But that's what a great opportunity.
But your point, Steve, was that you're not embarrassed to say, well, if it works in Normal, let's explore it in Bloomington.
Yes, or in addition to that, to say, why have some people go into one city and come into another city and they have a different system that they have to do? At least if you learn one system, you can use the same system throughout the whole city, and that's good for businesses and good for visitors rather than having two different systems.
Is there any utility, or have you actually gone back to talk about some past issues such as the Metro Zone that may have built mistrust between the two communities, maybe simply in terms of how to avoid those kinds of issues in the future? Mark?
We have talked about it, Steve and I, and I think we both regret how that played out. And I think we both could have done things differently. And I don't know, I think if Steve had been sitting in the chair, I would have, I guess I think we probably could have gotten something worked out that we both could have lived with. Might not have been completely happy, but something we both could have lived with. That water's over the bridge at this point. But I think, I believe that, again, in my relatively short tenure here, I think any kind of an issue like that would come up, I really would like to believe that Steve and I would sit down and have a conversation together. And if we could come to some mutual agreement, we would each go back and do our best to persuade our elected people to follow suit.
Well, and what Mark and I both said is it's behind us now, and we want to leave that met there. And
no going back on Metro Zone at this point. Steve, Mark made a point, which I think is interesting. It's the cities are more than just the city managers. You do have the elected officials. Is there any repair that needs to happen there between how the elected officials get along or how the elected officials in Bloomington view the elected officials in Normal and vice versa, Steve?
Well, of course, that's between the elected officials, and I don't presume to speak for the elected officials in any way. They can certainly speak for themselves. I would like to do everything I could to try and facilitate as much cooperation as possible. One of our city council persons has wanted to try to do a joint council meeting kind of once a month or so, and so that is still out there on the books, maybe not once a month or once a quarter or something. So we can talk about joint issues. And so that's still out there, and we're trying to make that happen if we can.
Town of Normal Council Member R.C. McBride, who also works as GLT's general manager, and now former Ward 9 Alderman Jim Fruin, drafted what they called Principles of Partnership back in March. This stressed regionalism, cooperation, the need to recognize that even though they're elected officials in serving separate municipalities, they represent the entire community. What do you think of this document, Steve? And do you think elected officials may discuss this document at some point or adopt it or move forward on it in any way?
I don't know, and I haven't had any conversation with the elected officials about that. I know that that's out there and that Jim Fruin would like to have moved forward with it, but at this point, I haven't got any comments back from any elected officials, nor has this been brought forward again. But all of those are great ideas, and it's kind of like the flag, motherhood, and apple pie. Who could argue with
that? Sure. So there's nothing in those principles you disagree with.
I certainly don't.
Is it your responsibility as city manager to sort of maybe bring the councils to the table to talk about this?
Well, I don't think it's our responsibility necessary to bring them to the table. But I think what it is our obligation to make sure this gets in front of them again and let them decide what they would then like to do with it.
So suggest maybe they have a discussion about it, but the ultimate decision about whether to discuss it or not lies with the elected officials.
Yeah, a lot of times what we do, and we've done on done a couple of those already like this week, is what we do is we will send it out kind of like as a white paper to the elected officials and say, here is something that is floating around. Please give us your thoughts on what you might like to do with it.
And Mark?
I'll echo Steve's comments. I think it's really up to the elected officials to lead this and to consider whether they want to move forward. I think it's wonderful. There's nothing in there that I disagree with. And again, these are guiding principles. It's not an ordinance or a contract. It's guiding principles, and they are all worthy of consideration. And they've been out there for over a year, I think, and I think on Normal side, I think the council was, they never took a vote on it, but I sense there was reasonable level of support there. Maybe that's something that could still be resurrected. I think the ideals that are expressed in those guiding principles are virtuous, and I think they would. It would probably be somewhat groundbreaking. Maybe we'd be a trendsetter, but I think all in all, they're wonderful. But whether they're going to move forward, I really don't know.
On those principles of partnership, one of them, which I would highlight, says we agree to not publicly speak ill of our neighbor, and we recognize doing so reflects poorly on our entire community. Well, that's absolutely right, because when you start speaking ill of each other, it escalates. It's one after the other. I'd rather have it escalate and de-escalate to begin to speak better of each other and to work together as one community, as opposed to speaking ill of each other. And so when it says we agree not to publicly speak ill of our neighbors, I'm all for that.
Well, let's talk about the latest issue between the two communities, and that's the level of funding of the Small Business Development Center at Illinois Wesleyan University in Bloomington. Normal agreed to a 60-40 split with the city. The city came back with a 50-50 split. Steve, what happened there?
Well, the the council voted on that, and there was a discussion at it at the council meeting, and we had it twice. The first time the council discussed it, and they hadn't decided which way they wanted to do, I said, let's bring it back to a second meeting, and we'll have the legislation written with either A or B, and after the council's had a chance to talk about it, they can come back and then they can choose which way they wanted to do it. The action was taken to go with the 50-50 split, and that was the vote that was taken. Maybe again in retrospect, maybe we could have figured out what we wanted to do ahead of time, and instead of having a decision made on the floor, we could have figured out ahead of time what we wanted to do. But the answer was that the council decided to that they wanted to go with a 50-50, and I think it was based on some things in the past where some EDC monies and things had been done 50-50.
The town's sticking with a 60-40 split.
Yeah. We committed to the Small Business Development Center in Illinois Wesleyan that we would of the shortfall, we would fund 40%, which we have done that.
And 60-40 is based on population and geography.
Exactly. It's 60-40. So essentially, our taxpayers have the same financial burden as would Bloomington taxpayers in a 60-40 scenario. And I will say, during the discussion at the Bloomington council meeting, which I watched online, there were council members that made that point, that was a fair split. There were others that preferred a 50-50. I will say, just this is a great example. The morning after that vote, Steve reached out to me the next morning and said, gee, I hope this is not going to cause you problems. We didn't know how it was going to turn out. We thought maybe the council would go 60-40, and clearly there was a pretty lively discussion about that. And I said, no. I said, we're really not going to talk about what you did. We're going to talk about what we're going to do, and we're still going to do 40%. And I reached out to Illinois Wesleyan SBDC and says, we're not planning to match the 50%. And they said, that's fine. We'll figure out. That'll leave a little bit of a gap. We'll figure out how to fill that. That's fine. So it really wasn't – there was no real dispute there. I think, again, Steve and I had talked in advance, and we were hopeful the city would do 60%, but 50% is pretty darn close. Yeah. And ultimately, it's their money, and they have to decide how they want to spend it, and we can't dictate that. So I do think – and I think Steve understands this, and I think Mayor Renner understands it – on most of those intergovernmental agreements as we go forward, we're going to try to stick to that 60-40 model, which seems to be fair. That doesn't mean there may be exceptions to that. There have been in the past, and there may be exceptions in the future. But in this case, you know, Steve and I talked, and you know, it was not a major issue.
In the future, generally, usually, most of the time, I have told the council that I will go forward with a 60-40 default. That'll be normally what we'll do, so that we avoid this kind of a dispute within the council and within the between the two communities. And if the council would like to do something, then they can certainly do different. But I think my recommendation in the future would be 60-40, because that's generally fair.
Mm-hmm. What about the concept of a shared sales tax in the community? That was an election issue. Some elected officials, even though the talk sort of broke down and Bloomington made a decision that they didn't want to explore that concept any further, there really wasn't a proposal at that point. It was more of a discussion that they didn't want to, my impression was that they didn't want to continue. Could that be resurrected? And do the city managers drive that, or do the elected officials drive that, Steve?
Oh, well, I think the elected officials drove that. I know they have some strong
feeling about
it.
Will they in the future?
And I think they'll bring that back up in the future. I think it's an issue that still needs to be talked about, and I think they may choose to talk about it.
I would agree. I think that's an issue that will be driven by the policymakers as opposed to the managers. Now, certainly the city managers and the finance directors, if that conversation happens, we'll get involved in providing, you know, technical information and so forth. Steve and I have discussed it, and I think we both are of the opinion it doesn't hurt to talk about anything. And I think that's one of the things that we've committed to. If there's an idea, let's at least sit down and talk about it. We may not agree at the end of the day, but it certainly doesn't hurt to explore it. I think the sales tax sharing idea is certainly worthy of a conversation. Whether at the end of the day we all agree that it's the right thing to do, I don't know about that, but it surely doesn't hurt to talk about it. And I've heard through the grapevine, I guess, that I think some of the Bloomington Council members that were initially reticent to talk about it have sort of come around, and I think they're more open to the idea, at least to have a conversation. And so I suspect, I agree with Steve, I think that one will come back. I'm not sure the timing, but it will be driven probably by the councils and not by the staff.
I think it speaks to a bigger issue, though, and that's the whole economic development concept, and specifically the Economic Development Council, and that is that we don't have a Bloomington EDC and a normal EDC. We have an EDC, and what I think Mark would agree, we would be happy to bring development to this community, and I don't think we're arguing about where it goes, because we have people who live in one community and work in another community, and we'd like economic development for the community. The rising tide lifts all ships. Boats.
That's exactly what I was going to say. We're on the same page. That's City Manager Steve Rasmussen with the City of Bloomington. Also in the studio, Mark Peterson with the Town of Normal. I'm Mike McCurdy. This is Sound Ideas. The City of Bloomington and Town of Normal are facing budget problems. Have the two of you identified areas of future cooperation, maybe economies of scale, which could be discussed to deliver municipal services at a lower cost? We were talking about emergency services. I don't know if that qualifies, but emergency services, we could certainly go there, or any other services the two communities provide that, if you cooperated on, might save money in the long run. Mark?
Well, first of all, let me say we cooperate more than people realize. And that does result in two things. It results in savings of taxpayer dollars, and it results in improved service level. And I think those are the two keys. If we can save money and or improve service level, we should talk about it. And there's a lot of that goes on day to day that people don't know about. I'm sure things that go on that Steve and I aren't even aware of between our different operating departments. But I think we can do a heck of a lot more of that. And we've had, again, Steve's only been around a short time, and we've had some general conversations about that. But I think over time, we'll want to actually get into explore some very specific opportunities where we can work together and save money and improve service delivery. I think absolutely we can do more.
Steve?
Yeah, two examples that make sense that everybody knows about. One is the Bloomington Normal Water Reclamation District, Benward. It doesn't make any sense to have two sewer systems. We have one bus line, as you're well aware of. And one of the things that's coming out in the future, and I know we have some councilmen that are talking about that, is what we could do with 911. We have two 911 systems, which has gone through a number of different evolutions, and I think coming up in the future is a new system where we maybe have one system for the whole community, and that would be good for everyone.
So that means Bloomington might leave its own service and join Metcom?
What happens is there's a new system that's coming on called NetGen, the next generation of 911, which is coming on in a couple of years. And I think it may be possible that the whole community would move to that. So instead of each individual community moving towards its separate new system, if there's a new system that's coming on that could include everybody that's better, as we evolve to that, maybe the whole community can evolve to that. There's a lot of details on that left to be worked out and a lot of talking to be done on that. But that's an example of one of
When you talk about systems, are you talking about the technology, or are you talking about the administrative level of the 911 service in the communities?
I think both.
Yeah, I think what Steve's referring to is both, but primarily technology. And I would call it less. And we have talked specifically about Metcom, and again, Steve wasn't around, and so there's been a learning curve for him on what is this all about. And again, a lot of water has gone under the bridge since the Metcom decision, but I think I would use the term merger more than them joining. I think they bring assets to the table.
Exactly.
We have assets. Maybe we figure out a way to merge in a new kind of an organization that is much more efficient and effective and probably save some money too. Why not? And as technology is changing, as some of these new systems will be implemented, maybe that's the time strategically to look at merging when we're both investing in new technology to make, first of all, darn sure we're investing in identical technology that works together and talks together. Initially, when the city decided to move in a different direction, we had different radio systems. And that was not a good thing.
Right.
We could not communicate. Well, that's since been rectified. But I think there's a lot more we can do with emergency communication to work together to make the system a lot more efficient and more effective. And so we will, my guess is that's one of the areas that we'll continue to discuss pretty actively and seek ways to cooperate and collaborate much more effectively than we have in the past.
Is there a timeline for that discussion regarding 911 service?
No. As Steve pointed out, there's new technologies emerging over the next couple of years, but I would say now's the time to start talking about that. So I would say we will probably engage in those conversations fairly soon. That's one where the county will certainly get involved and other agencies, but I think now's the time to begin discussing it. One other little example I was going to mention, I said there's a lot of cooperation that goes on that even Steve or I don't know about. We have a plumbing inspector who has been off work. It's going to be off work for a while due to a medical condition. And I was just talking to our chief building official the other day, and he said, I said, what are we doing to fill the gap? Well, Bloomington's helping us out. We've reached out to their plumbing inspectors, and if we can't handle it, they'll come over. And that's something that they worked out on a departmental basis. Steve didn't probably know about that. I didn't know about it. Well, that's terrific. They should be doing that. And that's a great way, just a good, and there are countless of those examples that I could cite that are going on day to day that hopefully make people feel good that the two cities do really work well together. They hear about the conflicts and some of the larger issues where there are some differences. But I do think that at the administrative level, and I think also at the political level, things are improving. And I know there's talk. Our two elected bodies talk individually, and they get along pretty well. And I do see joint meetings probably on a regular basis in the future, so we can do a better job of communicating and avoid confrontational situations that hopefully get ourselves on the same page. And I think Steve and I will certainly work to that end, but I really see the city councils wanting that as well.
One of the things that Mark mentioned about the inspectors, okay, great. I didn't know about that.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you what my philosophy is let the departments run their departments, and you'll be surprised at how great they do.
Yes, exactly.
Bloomington Alderman, let's go back to emergency services for a moment. Bloomington Alderman heard about fire and paramedic response times at a recent council meeting. They could be better, and it's calls to the city's northeast quadrant that drives up the average response time. Council also heard about a first responder personnel shortage in Bloomington. Many people who drive through this area of Bloomington might already assume it's in Normal because of the geography and how the border winds its way through the northeast part of the community. What can the two communities do to address the issue of fire protection in the community, and especially in the northeast part of Bloomington? Steve?
The majority of calls that we get, particularly in the northeast section, are for paramedics. They're not for fire responses. And one of the reasons that we have a shortage or a lack of response time in the northeast quadrant is because the people that would respond to that are responding to other parts of the city, to the southwest. And so one of the ways in which you can reduce the response time in the northeast is to put another response unit at our main station in the center of town. So you add five more people in another unit, you reduce response time without having adding another station.
I guess where I'm going, though, is there any opportunity to cooperate with the town of Normal in terms of paramedic coverage in the northeast part of town, where maybe there's a cost-sharing agreement and Normal responds to some of those calls?
Well, yeah.
People don't really care where the paramedic is from. They just want the paramedic there as quickly as possible.
Sure. And Normal has offered us the opportunity of a contract to do that, and we have looked at that, and that certainly is possible. Right now, the data seems to show that we get the best response time for the least cost by putting another unit downtown.
And, Mark, what about other areas of cooperation in terms of public safety?
Well, first of all, I want to stick with fire and EMS, because you're exactly right, Mike. When people call and need an ambulance in particular, they don't care what the emblem is on the side of the truck. Both fire departments have identically trained people that are, you know, they have the same capabilities and very high level capabilities, I might add. We're very fortunate in this community that we provide paramedic service. We have a very robust mutual aid system. So we are backing each other up all the time.
Or yeah,
if the city has ambulances that are otherwise obligated, and we'll send our units. We don't care what the boundary line is. We'll send our units out there, and that will continue. So and that's the beauty of having two fire departments right next to each other. You have that backup. It's very unlikely, for example, we're going to have two major structure fires at the same time. So we've got all of the capability of Bloomington's fire department at our disposal. We call and they come. They don't ask questions.
Sure.
They come. Vice versa. They call us. We come. And that's a tremendous asset that we both share, where if we were independent communities, we would not have that opportunity to borrow the resources. So I just want to make it clear. And the Northeast is kind of an unusual situation. It's a hard area for both of us to deal with. As you know, Mike, we are planning to build a new station out in the Northeast part of town because our response times are not good. And we actually began this conversation with city staff when David was still there, and Chief Moore and our fire chief Humer began to say, how can we, and this was post Metro Zone, mm-hmm. how can we work together and how can we help you? And we've actually agreed to, if necessary, to site our new fire station in a location that would be advantageous to Bloomington and Normal. If the city says, you know, thank you for that, but we've got it covered, we're fine, then we'll probably look at a location that just meets our needs. You know, there's a lot of armchair quarterbacks out there that says, well, I know what you need to do. You need to just put a fire station right here. Well, it's a lot more complicated than that. And I know Chief Moore is a outstanding fire chief, and they'll get it figured out. But we're there to help, and we're there to cooperate if they need us.
And Steve, there's something you want to add?
Well, yeah, I was going to add that the two fire chiefs and the two police chiefs and the two public works directors, all of those work together very, very well in a community effort, and we should all be proud of the work that they do together without being directed to do those things.
Bloomington City Manager Steve Rasmussen. You also heard from Town Manager Mark Peterson, who retires at the end of March. Peterson says he urgently wants to build the relationship between the two communities while he's still serving as manager. And he says he's invited Rasmussen to a department head staff meeting in Normal, and Rasmussen has reciprocated. On Wednesday's Sound Ideas, the city managers discuss a welcoming cities ordinance that would curtail local law enforcement cooperation with federal immigration authorities. That interview with Mark Peterson and Steve Rasmussen comes your way Wednesday at noon and 6 p.m. on Sound Ideas.
Doesn't matter if you're looking back at 2017 or looking into the new year, big stories are everywhere.
The standard deduction nearly doubled.
Kim warned the U.S. that its mainland is within.
Allegations of sexual harassment and.
When you just need to get caught up and when you want to dig deep, count on Morning Edition for the latest updates and the background that slows the news down. Listen every day.
Your Morning Edition, Monday through Friday, now starting at 4 a.m. on GLT.
Support for GLT's Sound Ideas comes from Country Financial Representative Justin M. Boyd, helping individuals and families create solid plans for the future through a combination of investment options and life insurance. Information at justinmboyd.com. This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org.
It's Sound Ideas. I'm Mike McCurdy. Appeals Court Judge James Kinect thinks this is a time of great moral conflict. He's the featured speaker at the 42nd annual Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Awards Luncheon on January 20th. The awards are given out annually by the Normal and Bloomington Human Relations Commissions, honoring difference makers who break down barriers in the community. Kinect is one of those difference makers and a past MLK Award winner himself. GLT's Ryan Denham spoke to the 4th District Judge about his 42 years on the bench and why he still trusts the government and the art of politics.
Judge Kinect, you grew up in Lincoln, later went to Illinois State University for college, then law school at the U of I. As a younger man, how did you end up realizing you wanted to pursue a career in law?
I had always thought about it because I like the use of the written word and the spoken word, and I thought that I would be a good advocate for a position. You know, the adage around the dinner table, oh, you always argue, so you ought to be a lawyer. I don't think that's accurate, but the ability to use speech and the written word are important.
What else do you think it was about your personality, your disposition as a young person that made you particularly well-suited for a career ultimately on the bench, which you got to pretty quickly?
Well, before I graduated from college and then afterwards, I worked for the Illinois Department of Mental Health, and I worked at what was then called Lincoln State School, then Lincoln Developmental Center. And I worked primarily with adolescents, male and female adolescents, in sporting activities and recreation, working with those young men and women who were primarily part of a vast underclass. They were African American. They came primarily from Cook County. They made their way through the Cook County court system because they may have tested as developmentally disabled, or then it was called mentally retarded. Primarily, it was a cultural deprivation because very many of them were of close to normal intelligence or normal intelligence, but they had not been in school, or they had not been nurtured in the home, or simply hadn't had opportunities. Their poverty, and in some instances their race, had sent them hundreds of miles away from home to live in a state institution. And I think I learned a lot about empathy and compassion and some of the ills of society that I probably believed that I could help correct, or the idea of serving people.
And the courtrooms can be a surreal, even odd place if you're kind of an outsider coming in. You're interacting with people at critical moments in their life. It can be, you know, the worst day of their lives in some cases. How do you keep perspective in touch with the real world outside the kind of the limiting confines of a courtroom? What things do you do personally to not lose sight of that real world out there?
Well, I've done a lot of work with youth in terms of coaching and interacting with them. I've tried to see them on the playgrounds. I've always had an interest in education. I think that my experience at the state school gave me an understanding of a lot of human problems. And when I saw those in the courtroom, I wasn't shocked. I wasn't put off. I had the ability not to be depressed by it or take it home with me. And I always tried to treat each case as if it was the most important case there was, because it was the most important for the people before me. In an anecdotal sense, when I was elected to the appellate court, we happened to be visiting a building in uptown Bloomington where I would have a local office. I needed to rent a local office. And we walked into the building, my wife and I, and Planned Parenthood had their main office there. It's on Washington Street. And we were friends of the executive director, the local executive director of Planned Parenthood, Dixie Axley, and we were delivering something to her. And my wife said, as we entered the building, she said, "You know, you ought to have your office here." And I said, "Well, it looks like a nice building. Why do you say that?" She said, "Because if you come to work in this office building, in the hallways and in the stairways and on the elevator, you will see young men and women who are dealing with some very important issues in their lives, going up to Planned Parenthood for a well baby clinic or seeking birth control, or you'll see a boyfriend sitting out in the car smoking a cigarette waiting for his girlfriend to go up and find out, is she pregnant? And she said, that'll keep you in touch with real people. And I thought about that, and it just really, really hit home. And I had some interesting experiences there in the building. And across the street is the alternative school. That's kind of interesting, and I think it keeps me in touch with the everyday life of everyday people, and I think that's important.
You're the featured speaker at the Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Awards Luncheon on January 20th. Judge Kinect, what are your thoughts on how much diversity exists within Illinois courtrooms? Are there enough people of color on the bench or acting as prosecutors or even on the defense side? What have you seen from your standpoint?
I would say no. There ought to be greater diversity, but that's something that can't happen overnight or as fast as society might like it to. You have to remember that the first judge in McLean County that was a woman wasn't appointed until 1993. In terms of racial diversity, it's simply a matter of students graduating from college and having the academic ability to get into law school and having the interest in doing that. And I've known a lot of fine black lawyers and fine black judges. There's an African-American on the Illinois Supreme Court, Justice Charles Freeman, and he's been there for a long time. And there have been women on the Illinois Supreme Court. So we're seeing more diversity, but that's only going to continue if there's an access to education and support for education. And by support, I mean not only moral support and educational support, but monetary support for education.
When it comes to equity and fairness in the justice system, especially as it relates to people of color, where do you see the greatest room for improvement?
Certainly the criminal justice system. I mean, but we've been struggling with that and how to address it. Mandatory sentencing and the federal sentencing guidelines have very often disproportionately affected people in the inner city. Better access to representation. I think public defenders do a wonderful job in courtrooms all across America, but they're understaffed, underpaid, and overwhelmed with the number of cases they have. If more resources were dedicated to that, people would have an equal chance at justice. Everybody should understand that no one is promised justice. You're promised the opportunity for justice and what you hope is a fair courtroom. And I think when we talk about reforms that are needed, I don't think society and the legal system have been fair to women. It hasn't been fair to children. It hasn't been fair to families. There are all kinds of things that we need to address, and many of them are related to inequality in terms of pay and education, and it isn't limited to people of color.
This is GLT's Sound Ideas. I'm Ryan Denham. I'm here with Judge James Kinect, the featured speaker at the community's Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Awards Luncheon on January 20th. The Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Awards Luncheon that you'll be the featured speaker at, one of the things it does is celebrate people, right? The individual efforts of difference makers in our community. But for many problems in our world, people look to the government as a solution. As you've gotten older, how has your personal worldview kind of evolved? When you see injustices out in the world, do you think of them as failures of government in most cases, or opportunities for individuals to step up, some combination of the two? What's your thinking there?
It has to be both, in the sense that we come together, we band together, and we form a government. And the idea of government, in part, is to do those things for us that we cannot do for ourselves. Gun violence, racial injustice, poverty, economic inequality. I'm reminded of the Me Too movement. I think that's part of equality. And when I think about the government keeping its promises, I would like for somebody to tell me how many people in Puerto Rico today have electricity and how many are still without. And I'm unable to understand why Houston, because of the flooding, and New Orleans as well, California, because of the horrendous fires, and Puerto Rico, because of what happened months ago, and those have filtered out of the news cycle, so our saintly concern for those people, and it always is a saintly concern when the event happens. We donate, we give, we send, we go, we volunteer. But when it falls out of the news cycle and instead we're focusing on the tweets of the person who sits in the White House, we're not addressing the ills of society that government is responsible, that has a responsibility to address. And that bothers me a great deal. I think that those kinds of things are important, and the people that get recognized at the Martin Luther King luncheon, the award winners, as well as a lot of people in the audience who ought to win awards or who perhaps have won them in the past, those are the people who are addressing these kinds of issues.
As a judge, I don't want to push you too far into politics, but you know, as an elected Republican, you are a political creature of in some sense. So I want to ask, what is your current view of our modern political climate as it relates to how polarized we appear to be, at least? I'm 33 years old, and I want to ask somebody who has been around a little bit longer, has it always been this way? What is your view of where we are today?
I don't think it's always been this way, but I do think we need to look at history to understand that we have been through periods of time. We went through a period of McCarthyism, where Joseph McCarthy, who bears a certain resemblance to the man in the White House in terms of his means of operating, caused great divisiveness in America over the Red Scare and communists, and he did it in a way that was indecent and reprehensible. And it took one person, a lawyer, Joseph Welch, and he stopped during the Army-McCarthy hearings and said, after McCarthy said something particularly repellent that basically attacked and was going to destroy the reputation of a young man, he said, "At long last, sir, have you no decency?" I'm interested that there are people, good, well-meaning people who are intelligent and understand issues, who are able to say some of the president's policies are good policies. Some of the things that have happened in Congress and in the White House have been good. I don't necessarily disagree, but I think what they fail to understand is the president is a symbol both to our country and to the rest of the world. And when you are petty and vengeful and vindictive, you're not setting the example that rises to the level of the symbolism that that office has always held. Whether you agreed or disagreed with the president or his policies, they had to act with integrity and dignity, and I think that has really contributed to the divisiveness. But at the same time, as long as there's no nuclear button pushed, I'm confident that the republic will survive and we'll be here as a society and, in our instance, as a community, long after someone else is in the White House. I'm confident in that. I trust government and the art of politics, but as with everything else, it depends on who's there. Who are the humans that are engaging in the process to help govern us in a way that benefits us all, benefits society, and makes us stronger and better than we were yesterday? That ought to be the goal of government, to make us stronger, better, more civilized, more equal than we were the day or the week or the year before. I had a quote from Dr. King. He said, "The hottest place in hell is reserved for those who remain neutral in time of great moral conflict." This is a time of great moral conflict.
Will that be the primary message you try to deliver on January 20th, that in times of great conflict, the importance of individuals stepping up and getting involved is going to be crucial?
Yeah, I think that will be part of it. And I found a note card that I kept on my desk. In 1941, Franklin Delano Roosevelt made a speech. And the speech centered on the four freedoms. And those same four freedoms are inscribed on stonework in front of the McLean County Museum of History. That's freedom of speech, freedom of worship, freedom from want, and freedom from fear. And those first two we battle over as a society and discuss and go back and forth. But the second two, freedom from want and freedom from fear, I think those apply to every issue that we've talked about today. I want to be free of poverty and inequality. I know that I will have to work to be free from that, but I don't want there to be societal constraints that are unfair that put me, keep me in that category of want. And I want to be free from fear. I want to be free from fear from outside threats, North Korea. I want to be free from the fear that someone's going to walk into a school and fire off an automatic weapon. I want to be free from the fear that I'm going to be treated differently because of the color of my skin or the song that I sang or the religion that I ascribe to or the lack of religion. I want society to be a place where we can be safe and secure in our homes and in our schools and on our street. And I think that's what all of us aspire to. That's what we want. We want to be free from want and free from fear. And then when we are in that position, we're able to exercise our freedom of speech. It's pretty difficult to exercise your freedom of speech when you are squashed and held down by poverty.
That's Judge James Kinect, the featured speaker at the community's Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Awards Luncheon on January 20th. I'm Ryan Denham.
The winners of the 2018 MLK I Have a Dream Awards are high school students Jordan Blith from Bloomington and Xavier Higgins from Normal. The adult award winners are Andre Hersey of Normal and the late Lorenzo Marshall of Bloomington. Tickets for the January 20th luncheon are still available. Thanks for choosing WGLT Normal and WGLT.org and Sound Ideas. Our website, WGLT.org, is where you can find the full Sound Ideas podcast and the individual stories and interviews you heard today. Thanks today to GLT's Ryan Denham and News Director Charlie Schlenker. We want to know what you think of Sound Ideas. Post comments at facebook.com/WGLTFM. Our email address is news@WGLT.org. And you can tweet about the show. Use the hashtag Sound Ideas. We're all at WGLT News. I'm at Mike McCurdy. This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org, Bloomington Normal's public media.